All right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to People's Rights, September 17th, 2023. I'm glad you're all here. We've got an excellent speaker today. He's going to be talking about persuasive speaking. And Michael Gladkoff has written a book about this, and he has been out there in the political world writing speeches and giving persuasive speeches for a long time. And Michael has got a very interesting presentation for us today. He's going to have a little game for us to play at the end as well. So let me introduce Michael Gladkoff. Come on up, Michael. Thank you.
Yeah, today I wanted to just give some historical perspective on where we are today. Yeah, just some historical perspective of where we are today with society. Yeah, just give some historical perspective today where we are with society, where we're going. And I also talk about persuasive language. It's something I do. I've spoken to large marketing conferences to advertising agencies. I've taught marketing professionals and advertising professionals persuasive language, and we'll be introduced. We'll just see that at the end, a little bit later in the presentation. But first, I want to give a bit of historical perspective. Now, quite a few years ago, after the end of World War II, in March 1946, it was a cold and windy day in Fulton, Missouri. And at the time, residents crowded the sidewalks of the town, and someone by the name of Winston Churchill came to that small town in Missouri to speak to the graduates that day. Also, on that day, President Truman spoke, but Winston Churchill pointed out, he said, from Stettin in the north to Trieste in the south, an iron curtain has fallen across the continent, and that was the beginning of the Cold War. And during the Cold War, millions of people found themselves behind the iron curtain. So they couldn't do things. You couldn't own a business. There was no free speech. You had to have permission to even own a typewriter behind the iron curtain. So it was total clampdown on information. And that was shortly after World War II. And the powerful Iron Curtain metaphor, that's one thing I talk about as metaphors, the word Iron Curtain lasted for 45 years, and people use that to describe those people that lived behind in those societies where they had very few rights. So that shows us the power of language, that one word, how people use that word so effectively and remembered it so well. And despite seeing millions of people lose their freedoms, they had very few freedoms, they had very few choice, they couldn't travel, you couldn't travel outside of those societies. Countries in the West thought they would live with it, they would accommodate it. But other people had different ideas. And one of these people that brought an end, helped bring an end to that system was Ronald Reagan. He had an idea from since the 60s to bring down the communist society. And he worked towards that for many years. And after he, I just want to talk about how he did that. But first of all, he was a professional communicator who had spoken from a young age. He had been in theater productions. He had been a radio announcer in his early 20s. He became an actor. And during the 1950s, he was the spokesman for General Electric. And at the time, he was a supporter of big government, actually. He was a New Deal supporter. He supported Franklin D. Roosevelt and the government programs and all the controls. But as he learned more, he traveled across the country. He learned about just the detrimental effect of all the controls and government on people. So he's changed his ideas. He also read the works of some of the libertarian writers like Ludwig von Mises, Murray Rothbard. He was introduced to those ideas, and he changed his ideas. And at the end of that, he gave a very famous speech called The Time for Choosing in 1964. And he said some profound things. It's considered a major speech in American history. And he evoked the memory of the American patriot Patrick Henry, who said, "You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery." He quoted Winston Churchill, who said, "The destiny of man is not measured by material computations. When great forces are on the move in the world, we learn we're spirits, not animals." When he became the president of the United States in 1981, his main goal was to defeat communism, and his idea was, we win, they lose. He took steps in public and private to make that happen. One of the things he did was he lowered the price of oil behind the scenes to affect the Soviet Union and make it more difficult for them to survive economically. He created what's called the Strategic Defense Initiative, otherwise known as Star Wars, which played a major role in bringing down the Soviet Union because they could not keep up economically with that. And he supported the people of Poland and the Solidarity Movement as they were under pressure from communism. They tried to rise up against that and were put down, but he supported them as well. His advisors told him to be nice, don't be offensive, don't use strong language. But in most cases, he didn't listen to them. He had said, he'd called the Soviet Union the evil empire, and that had an effect on how they were perceived in the world. He told stories as well. He was a great storyteller and told stories about how people had lived in those societies and how they could overcome it. In June 1987, he was scheduled to speak at Berlin's Brandenburg Gate. And his advisors had told him, don't mention the Berlin Wall, the wall that divided East and West Berlin. But he didn't listen to his advisors. And he told, if you remember the famous speech, he said, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." And that speech has been remembered in history as one of the most powerful in the last 100 years. At the time, the speech earned mixed reviews, and even people on Reagan's team were ambivalent to its effect. But the results, long-term results and short-term results, were quite different. The German newspaper Bild called it the speech that changed the world. And Time magazine put it in its top 10 list of speeches in history. And I remember in 1980, the night before the election of Ronald Reagan, I saw him speak in San Diego when I was in high school. And I noticed that after he was elected, the mood of the country had changed. It was very negative during that time before that. And the spirit of the country had changed, and the people just felt differently after that. And on a personal note, the actions of Ronald Reagan affected me in one way, and that was the fact that my father was born in the Soviet Union in 1920s, and he escaped during World War II and ended up with his parents and his sister in the United States. And for 45 years, they couldn't see their relatives over there because some of them were in the military, and it would have been very detrimental to their careers to have relatives in the West. So he didn't see those people for 45 years, and as a result of the end of the Cold War, which had been brought about in part by Reagan, he was able to see them again through the power of language, power of words, the power of communication. So that's just one example from history. In 2011, the leader of the Solidarity Movement in Poland, Lech Wałęsa, was asked what he thought of Reagan's impact. And he said, "I have to be personal when I speak about Ronald Reagan. We in Poland took him so personally. Why? Because we owe him our liberty. But what does a story mean in our time? I mean, we're in different situations, and I think instead of having an outer enemy, we have an inner enemy that's trying to take away our freedoms internally, and we need to fight back in many ways, and that includes the power of communication. And so for me, I decided to write a book on my experience as a speechwriter, communicator, and it's called Speaking for Freedom. And I started posting things on social media and had people messaging me saying, I don't post anything. It'll be bad for your career. It'll be bad for your profession. People where I live locally, some people were speaking out against COVID lockdowns, and those people were harassed and hounded out of business. So I think that it's important, really, that we speak up and that we take a stand. So I think that we can communicate strongly, effectively, and if we learn those secrets of communication, like people like Reagan did to end the Cold War, I think we can really do a lot as far as connecting with people, persuading, and overcoming the situation we're in. And with that in mind, I've created these handouts. I'll be teaching some of these. We'll go over these now, some of the communication techniques that I teach. And what are figures of speech in history? Well, figures of speech are ways to organize language, and these go back to the ancient Greeks. We're on page one right now, 2,500 years ago. What they did is they categorized the persuasive ways of communication. And the ways to communicate fall into two main types of figures of speech, and those are called schemes and tropes. A scheme is a way to organize words, so you can repeat words, you can omit words, you can use balance. Those are the main ways to use schemes. Tropes are ways of using language in a figurative way, like a metaphor, where you say something and it means actually something else. It's something else to say what you're meaning. And today we'll be covering some figures of repetition. And the first one is alliteration. And the next one is anadiplosis, anaphora, assonance, epistrophe, epizeuxis, and polyptoton. So if you go to page five, alliteration. Now that's when you repeat consonant sounds in a phrase or sentence or paragraph. And if you look at the one of Barry Goldwater, he said, we are plodding at a pace set by centralized planning, red tape, rules without responsibility, and regimentation without recourse. So you can see there he's using the P sound and the R sound repetitively as a form of alliteration. Next one is one by Charlton Heston, who was a great patriot and firm believer in rights of the people. And he said, by daring to put on parchment what our founding fathers felt deep in their hearts, the long, silent soul of liberty rose up from a commoner's dream to become every man's birthright. So there he's using the P sound, the F sound repeatedly, and the S sound to create a persuasive statement using alliteration. And you'll notice a lot of these are used by businesses. Businesses spend millions of dollars coming up with brand names, slogans, and taglines. And here's a few on starting with slide 7. Coca-Cola, Kit Kat, PayPal, Krispy Kreme, TED Talks. Slogan by Breitling Watches, performance, prestige, passion for innovation. And today, tomorrow, Toyota. So these are all examples of how advertising people are doing it. So they're spending millions of dollars doing this. We can do this for our own messages as well to be more effective. Anadiplosis is when you repeat the last word or phrase of one sentence or clause and follow it by the next one. So Aristotle said, masculine republics give way to feminine democracies, and feminine democracies give way to tyranny, a form of anadiplosis. Another example on the next page is Margaret Thatcher, who said, without a healthy economy, we can't have a healthy society. And without a healthy society, the economy won't stay healthy for long. And from the film V for Vendetta, strength through purity, purity through faith. So you're repeating that word right next to each other in a phrase or clause. And Judge Clarence Thomas used that as well. He said, if you lie, you will cheat. If you cheat, will you steal? If you steal, you will kill. So using that technique to be more persuasive and effective. Another one from the advertising world, one of the ads is Kleenex Ultra. Ultra softness is all you feel. And a shave this close used to take guts. Today it takes gel. Gel makes a difference. So you repeating that word at the beginning, at the end of one sentence and the beginning of the next is a form of anadiplosis. Next one is very popular. It's called an aphora. It's when you repeat the beginning word, phrase, word or words and sentences, clauses, to create a repetitive effect where you're more effective. So the famous one from Winston Churchill, I won't read the whole thing, but we shall go to the end. We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. And it repeats that we shall phrase 11 times to make it more effective, more persuasive. And that's one of the probably one of the top quotes in a speech of the last, you know, over 100 years. So that's a highly effective technique. Donald Trump used that in his one of his speeches that he gave in Poland in 2017, where he said, we write symphonies, we pursue innovation, we celebrate our ancient heroes, embrace our timeless traditions and customs, and always seek to explore and discover brand new frontiers. We reward brilliance, we strive for excellence and cherish inspiring works of art that honor God. We treasure the rule of law and protect the right of free speech and free expression. And now, of course, for the advertising world, they use that technique as well. One example is open a Coke, open happiness. Coca-Cola, real ingredients, real taste, nor soups. And Apple, your music, your podcasts, your way. Another technique is assonance. And this is where you repeat vowel sounds, but not at the end of the sentence like a rhyme, but it's an internal rhyme. So a lot of these are found in ancient sayings, aphorisms or sayings that we use all the time. The early bird catches the worm, where you have the early bird and worm that rhyme. Honesty is the best policy. Let the cat out of the bag. A stitch in time saves nine. And the squeaky wheel gets to grease, where you have the E sound repeated three times. And Charlton Heston used that in one of his speeches, and he said, in that same spirit, I'm asking you to disavow cultural correctness with disobedience of rogue authority, social directives, and onerous laws that weaken personal freedom. So he's using that O sound repeatedly. So when you think about the amount of work it takes to craft a speech like something like this, the thought create that effective speech. They say that Winston Churchill spent around 2 hours on each paragraph of writing when he had a really important speech to deliver. Another example of assonance is in advertising. Stouffer makes real fast, real mean, lean cuisine. So you have the E sound, and it beeps, it sweeps as it cleans. Hoover vacuums, you have an E sound again. Next one is epistrophe, and that's where you repeat the ending sounds at the end of a phrase or clause. And one from the King James Bible that uses that, it says, when I was a child, I spake as a child, I understood as a child, and I thought as a child, but when I became a man, I put away the childish things. So the word child is repeated at the end of each clause of that sentence. And Frederick Douglass, the anti-slavery campaigner who escaped from slavery, said, to ensure good behavior, the slaveholder relies on the whip. To induce proper humility, he relies on the whip. To rebuke what he is pleased to term insolence, he relies on the whip to supply the place of wages as an incentive to toil. He relies on the whip. So you have that relies on the whip. It creates a rhythm that helps people remember and follow what he was saying. And another one, epistrophe, is Ayn Rand, who said, you can avoid reality, but you cannot avoid the consequences of reality. And another example of epistrophe from the advertising world. They're really good at this. Like I said, they spend a lot of money trying to persuade us. So they know all these techniques. So I think we should use them as well. Choose to be your most beautiful, salon beautiful. The right thing says everything, Samsung. And I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too? So you probably remember all these from advertising. They stick in your mind. And epizeuxis is a pretty simple one, and that's where you just repeat words consecutively. So from the Shakespeare play Othello, reputation, reputation, reputation. I have lost my reputation. Winston Churchill said, never give in, never, 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 in nothing great or small, large or pretty. Never again give in to convictions of honor and good sense. And Margaret Thatcher said, if a nation has spent, 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 and spent again, ours has. And getting to the world of advertising, epizeuxis, you probably remember this from the 70s, if you're that old, and that is when it's Libby's, Libby's, Libby's on the label, you will like it, on the table, table, table. So they're using it three times as a way to really persuade you, to get you to remember it. Finally, I think this is the last one. Polyptoton is when you repeat words derived from the same root, but they're not exactly the same. So in the King James Bible, had been a stranger in a strange land. Shakespeare play, Two Gentlemen of Verona, unheedful vows may heedfully be broken. And Lord Acton, power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So that's called polyptoton, where you use the same root of a word in a sentence. And it's used in advertising as well. Is that surprising? No, not really. Choosy mothers choose Jif, the word choosy and choose. Dr. Seuss, today you are you. That is truer than true. There is no one alive who is youer than you. And the things that you own end up owning you, from Fight Club. So that's a famous one. And here at the end is a little cheat sheet of what we discussed today. Again, alliteration is in when you repeat consonant sounds or letters that sound differently in consecutive sentences, clauses, or phrases. Anadiplosis is when you repeat the last word of one phrase, clause, or sentence at the beginning of the following phrase, clause, or sentence. Anaphora is when you emphasize a word or words by repeating them at the beginning of adjacent clauses or sentences. So the Winston Churchill, we shall fight on the beaches. Assonance is when you repeat similar vowel sounds preceded by following different consonants in the stressed syllable of adjacent words. So the early bird gets the worm. Epistrophe is when you repeat the same word or words at the end of successive clauses or phrases. So the Frederick Douglass quote relies on the whip at the end of each one. Epizeuxis is when you, it's a simple form of repetition when you repeat words consecutively. So Libby's, Libby's, Libby's on the label, label, label. And polyptoton is when you repeat words from the same root. So absolute power corrupts absolutely. Today we only covered 7 of these. I cover about 35 in my book, and Shakespeare used around 200 of these figures of speech in his language. That's why he's so memorable. People quote Shakespeare left and right, and had a powerful impact on the language. So things like really just scratched the surface today with only a handful of some of the techniques you can use. And as I said, advertising agencies, marketing, they use these techniques to get you to think a certain way, to persuade you. And what could you do if you use these for our, you know, our causes, for people's rights? I mean, and I think very few people are aware of these techniques, even in politics. You know, if you talk to people, speech writers, they really don't know a lot of these. So if you can learn these and apply these, and you're in a position where you need to speak, you could use it in campaign slogans, you can use it on posters, anywhere you can be a lot more persuasive using language. So in any format, videos. So just want to thank you for your time today. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you learned something as well. It's a little bit. And wanted to see if you had any questions. Any questions at the end of how these work or what I do or the impact of language on speech and on persuasion.
Yeah, I have a question. And I was wondering if you are familiar with a personality from England named Darren Brown. If you're not, he is a mentalist.
I heard of it. Yeah, and I've seen the documentary where he got somebody to like shoot somebody because he planted ideas in their head going somewhere, and he hypnotized them where they shot him. I think it was like a fake gun.
Right.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, how that worked. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So he talks about neuro-linguistic programming and hypnosis, and I was wondering if you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's important. In a lot of, like, I think neuro-linguistic programming is a newer concept that came up more in the 50s, but a lot of that is based on the older techniques like repetition and connecting with people. I haven't really studied it that deeply, but I know it has a big impact on writing and persuasion, and I would recommend, you know, studying that as well to just to get more in your toolkit as far as persuasion. And I think it's very effective. Yeah, next question.
My name is Ira, and actually I partnered with Derek on the quiz, so I'm not taking all the credit.
Oh, okay.
For finishing number two. So to the best of your knowledge, did Hitler use any of these?
They've been used for good and evil. I mean, some of the politicians, like I talk about various politicians, and I try to, you know, cover ones that were at least, you know, more pro-freedom. Hitler used them. Stalin used them. Lenin used them. So they were, they've been used throughout history going back over 2,500 years ago, and they've been used for good, evil, you know, freedom, tyranny, to try to persuade people. One person who used tons of these was Obama, and his speech writers use these, you know, they're very, you know, crafty. They get the top people in politics to use these techniques to persuade people. So, like I said earlier, groups like this, you know, people that are fighting for freedom need to use them as well.
And just a comment, I'm a big Reagan fan as well. And when the wall came down in 89, I mean, I cried. It was...
Yeah, it came down on my birthday, actually. And
November 9th.
Yeah.
Also, Kristallnacht.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was a big occasion, and people debate, you know, debate that in history, but I think, you know, he did have a big impact on it as far as making that happen.
Yeah. Thanks. Go
ahead. You know, I've taken a lot of speech classes, but I never heard of any of this before.
Okay.
Where do you learn it? I mean, what?
Well, I've been a speech writer. Originally, I've been a speech writer since 2005. So I found books and sources that taught these ideas. But then as time went on, I'd be reading something, or I'd be driving by and I'd see an example of one and I'd take a picture, I'd write it down. So I learned all of these, and I had to do a lot of study, like, you know, physically go down. Some of these advertising examples go back maybe 50 years. I went down to libraries to find these in books and journals where people had written about these. So it took a lot of research, and like I said, in my book, I have around 35, and Shakespeare used around 200 of it to make his language more powerful. So I think we can follow that example and make our language more powerful.
So your book teaches this.
Yeah. I have about...
I didn't miss anything in college then. Right? Okay.
Yeah. I just... today I said I taught 7, and I'm always learning about more of them as well.
I got good grades on speeches because I always psyched out my professor and wrote them according to their belief system.
Okay, yeah, that helps, yeah.
So I think I just came up with a good figure of speech. Maybe you can point out to me which of the categories it falls into. The Constitution was consciously constructed to control government.
That is, that is an alliteration. Alliteration using the K, the C sound. So I think that, you know, that could be effective. Yep. Anyone else have any questions or comments?
Why should we buy your book?
Well, this is one chapter. Like I talked about, today I talked about 7. I cover around 35. You can learn all these techniques. Plus, I talk about various aspects of persuasion, speech writing, whether you're giving a video on a podcast. I talk about ways to begin, ways to end, ways to tell stories. And I give concepts throughout that as well.
Which is the easiest one to learn?
Probably, I'd probably say storytelling, because it's a natural thing that we do. We're exposed to from childhood. You know, people read to us. Our parents read to us when we're small. We tell stories in school, and I think that's a skill we can develop. And also, an important thing I talk about is the stories that you come across in everyday life if you write them down because you forget about them. You know, things that impact the freedom movement. Maybe you hear something, you read something. I'm finding I'm taking pictures of things with my phone, and I see something that's important. So I have pictures of quotes, I have pictures of stories that I see in, you know, magazines or online, just so I can catalog it all. Yeah.
I was wondering if you could tell us how we can get your book and any websites that you have with your information on there.
Yeah, definitely. It's called Speaking for Freedom. It's available on Amazon. You can get the Kindle or the soft cover, and it's my website is speakingforfreedom.com. And you can find the links on there. I have links to the Amazon website. And I'm going to also be giving more teachings online. I think it's, you know, something like this might be easier online, where I can control the I can show you slides and control it a lot better. So, yeah, do that. But it's available that way.
Thank you. I was wondering if you have any advice for someone like me. I make the mistake oftentimes when I'm at the mic of saying a lot. Yeah. Is there any techniques you can think of or any way I can overcome that?
I think everybody does that to some extent, but I think just the more you practice, you get used to it. And I was in in college, I joined a Toastmasters club. This was in San Diego. And every time he said or ah, they'd drop a marble in a can, and it made a really loud noise. And that, I think that trained people to do it very well. But I think they count them as well. So I think just practicing and being conscious of it so that you can keep track of it. And sometimes it depends on your day, your mood. If you're tired, maybe. If you had a long day and you have to speak, you might be doing that more. I've noticed, I fluctuate. I do it sometimes, and sometimes I don't do it at all. So that makes a big difference.
I've noticed that software has gotten very, very good today, and it will take out all of your ums and ahs and extra spaces. I have a problem with Red Ronnie. That was his nickname, because he was part of the World Federation, which really was not in the kind of the Republic idea.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing is he started gun control. He started it here in California.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never forgiven him for that.
Right, right. And the people I talk about, I don't think anybody's perfect as far as, you know, the political landscape. You always find somebody that does something bad, regardless. That's true, yeah. But, I mean, I look overall, what they did, what their feelings were, you know, what their philosophy was. Because even, you know, in our own lives, we don't always live up to our philosophy and our ideals, and I think politicians do this as well, of course. Yeah.
There's public and private thought. What they do in private, we never hear.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Hey, great talk today, man. Thank you. Got a lot out of that. I was just wondering, with your book, do you cover more, speaking conversation, or is it more geared towards, giving a speech like what you did
today? It could be for anything, really, because you could incorporate this like let's say you meet somebody and you want to convince them of your ideas. I mean, you can tell stories. Mm. You could even create some of these figures of speech that you roll out that you know that you've created beforehand. You could I talk about using statistics as well, how to connect with people, how to create rapport. So I cover a lot of different things that can be used, whether it's a speech, video, conversation, nice. Presentation. It basically will help with a lot of that.
Might be a bit of a crazy question, but do you cover listening at all?
I tell people to listen more for ideas to use in the future. So I don't really cover
it. The reason I say that's not to be a smart ass, but I've just read so many times that to be a great speaker, you've got to be a great listener.
That's true, yeah. And I think that's probably something that I should get more into and cover that more. I agree with that, yeah.
Thank you.
Do you cover metaphors as well?
Yeah, I do. I cover them. Yeah, those are very important. But today I just try to keep it simple by covering the ones of repetition. So I covered those, but metaphors.
I've got one.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, General Eisenhower got a call from the president, and he told him how are things at the front, and he said, "Well, sir, picture a donut, and we're in a hole."
Okay.
If we purchase the book for the same price, is there a better place to buy it so that you make more?
I didn't bring any with me today. I just it was more work, but I mean, if you get the
what's your biggest margin?
I'm on Amazon right now. That's the only one I'm on, and I know that you know they're pretty evil, but I didn't really find any alternatives where you could do print on demand. If anybody has any ideas, or I do.
I'll send you the information.
Okay, yeah, that's good. Yeah. That'll be helpful. And also there's one called Ingram Spark where I could get it in stores, which I haven't done yet, is get it into shops and things like that in the future. Yeah.
Okay, so you're on Amazon, but any difference in the margin between Kindle and the print version?
I think I get it. Well, Kindle, it's only $10, and I think I get a pretty good margin on that.
Yeah, because we want to give you the best margin is what we're trying to say.
Yeah, Kindle gives me the best margin for that. Yeah. And what I like to do, if you, I'm just always trying to get feedback to improve. So I'm going to give out a few forms, and if you're comfortable giving some feedback for improvement, things the way it can change. Sometimes I speak about this or other topics in general. So I think I'd appreciate it if you could provide feedback on today's presentation. So thanks again for having me.